they would have a minute.
National Development Plan, even before we can prioritize, we national development plan is a very good indicator that will guide us in the formulation and finalization of the green paper on rural development. I thought that context just has been is very, very important for us. I'm going to ask my colleague Hilton to then present the presentation to the Congress.
Thanks very much, Chairperson, honorable members, Director General, colleagues. The presentation is indeed on the implications for rural development and land reform policies arising from the Industrial Policy Action Plan, the new growth path and draft national development plan. Comments closed on that one in March, and we are waiting a finalized document based on the comments, hence the reference to it as a draft national development plan, which we drew from to develop this particular presentation. On the whole, the document actually starts off by affirming that indeed there is positive correlation and convergence between what we are doing as well as the issues being raised by these previous framework documents and plans. We follow by outlining the objectives of the individual ones, affirming the correlation amongst themselves, and then going into detail around this correlation. The document is divided into two parts. The first part just focuses on what I've outlined, and then the next part from page 20 of the slides actually gives more detail on the actions of these various three documents. So the focus of the presentation will be on the first 19 pages. The outline of the presentation, as I mentioned, will provide an abstract that states up front our confidence that we aligned to these particular programs of government. We give a background and high-level objectives of each one of these policy frameworks, ITEP 2, the New Growth Path, NGP, and the Draft National Development Plan, which I think the acronym DNDP. The correlations of the IPEP 2, NGP, and DNDP will be the third part of the presentation. The relevant actions for rural development and land reform policies will be identified and summarized from all three documents at a high level. And then the nascent indications of convergence between our policies and policy processes with the suggestions, directives and proposals from these documents will then be addressed. As I mentioned, the detail on relevant actions of the IPEP 2, NGP and DNDP will also be outlined. A section that we'll also cover is an honest identification of areas where we think we would actually improve on if we actually instituted those or actually firmed up on those particular areas. In terms of the abstract, the Department of Rural Development Land Reform Policies and Policy Review suggests a convergence with the objectives of the actions of the Industrial Policy Action Plan, the New Growth Path, and the National Development Plan. Central to this convergence are the policy reviews that commence since the 2005 Land Summit. Amongst them is the establishment of the proactive land acquisition strategy. Secondly, the comprehensive rural development strategy itself, which Cabinet adopted in August 2009, as well as the processes of the land reform green paper as the Director General has actually outlined. And indeed, what the Director General also outlined was that the green paper process is actually still a work in progress, and that the minister still has to reflect on these and provide guidance, suggestions of amendments, and how we proceed before it's actually tabled, finalized and tabled to cabinet. Turning to the IPEP 2, which was adopted in 2007, it was actually based on the cabinet's new industrial policy framework, which was also adopted in 2007 and set out government's broad approach to industrialization. The NIPF, or the National Industrial Policy Framework Implementation Action Plan, was set out in the IPEF. The IPEF was revised annually. However, in 2009, it was decided to have it as a 3-year rolling period with a 10-year outlook. The IPEF 2 was actually adopted in 2010, and further iterations to this particular document were updated in 2012. The objectives, the high-level objectives of the National Industrial Policy Framework, from which the IPEF is actually derived, were to facilitate diversification beyond the current reliance on traditional economies and tradable and non-tradable services, ensure long-term intensification of South Asia's industrial policy and movement towards a knowledge economy, promote a more labor-absorbing industrial path with emphasis on labor-intensive goods and services with economic linkages that generate employment, promote industrialization characterized by increased participation by historically disadvantaged people and marginalized regions, contribute towards industrial development in Africa. As you will realize, Chairperson, that theme, the central theme on all these documents is changing our growth path to ensure that there's rapid growth in our economy, but also at the same time, this is inclusive growth. Somewhere in the documentation is indicated that economic upturn and improvements in the early 2000s, I think from 2004 to 2007, was there. However, the extent to which jobs were created were actually not as satisfactory or not as expected. Hence the need to focus the efforts towards ensuring that the economic path is encouraged to actually create jobs, decent work, and inclusive economic development. And this is pronounced largely the new growth path that was adopted in 2010. The background of the growth path came from the newly created Economic Development Department. It sought to address non-inclusiveness of the South African economy, growing unemployment and poverty. It also built on the objective of the National Industrial Policy Framework, but went beyond embracing employment targets and detailing sectors and products, and identifying employment targets and detailing sectors and products for high value inclusive growth. It engaged with other key regional and enabling sectors such as rural development, economic competitiveness, education, conditions of work, and protection of vulnerable workers. In particular here, and relevant to us, is reference to farm workers. In terms of the objectives of the new growth path, restructure the South African economy and improve its performance towards creating decent work, reducing inequality and defeating poverty, identifying areas where employment creation is possible at a large scale, develop a policy package that can facilitate employment creation through, one, a comprehensive drive to enhance both social equity and competitiveness, mobilization of domestic investment around activities that create sustainable employment, social dialogue to encourage stakeholders to focus efforts on employment creation activities. So a participative approach with key stakeholders such as business, etc. In terms of the draft national development plan, the background, it was developed by the National Planning Commission established within the presidency. It sought to consult and research around a 20-year development plan for South Africa. In 2010, it released its diagnostic report, which amongst others identified 9 key challenges. We can affirm that most of those challenges actually also relate to the work that we are doing at the department. The draft plan was released for consultation in November 2011. Consultations, as I mentioned, closed in 2012 and are awaiting a final plan to be announced. A revised draft is awaited, as I mentioned. The development announced by 2012 State of the Nation address has been completed. The objectives of the plan. The high-level objectives of the plan were to, similarly, realize rapid and inclusive economic growth, address unemployment, poverty, and inequality, lowering costs for both household and business, increasing public infrastructure spending, growing South African agriculture and mineral sector, raising mining output, improving the functioning of the labor market, and raising competitiveness and exports. The correlations of these three policy frameworks and plans, the outline of the objectives of these suggests a common trend of ensuring inclusive growth. Inclusive growth to address the three challenges of unemployment, poverty, and inequality. The IPEF 2, LGP, and NDP were developed between 2007 and 2011. As such, they actually feed into each other and are correlated in their collectiveness and continuity in their thrust. The 2012 iteration of the IPEF states that, I quote, it is framed by and constitutes a key pillar of the NGP. On its part, the growth, the development plan states that in its section, its chapter on employment and economy and employment, that it builds upon the national growth path, but it's projected over a longer period of time rather than 10 years over 20 years. Hence, the point that we raised that there is correlation amongst these. So, in analysis of all these, I want to actually say some of the areas, the 13 areas that we have identified that indeed actually come out of these, which are relevant to our policy on rural development and land reform, are the following. Steering the economy towards a more value-adding and labor-intensive growth path. Specific reference is made to agro-enterprise as a key sector, tourism as key, green economy as key, and mining as well. These are detailed particularly in the IPEF 2 as well as the 490-page development plan. The second is faith and inclusive economic growth. The third is promoting small business. Fourth is investing in social capital. The fifth is achieving full employment, decent work, and sustainable livelihoods. The sixth is investing in infrastructure. Seventh, building on a low-carbon economy. The third is rural development in itself. The ninth is optimizing on international trade opportunities. The tenth is improving human development and human settlement. That's a cluster of a number of chapters. The 11th is building a capable state. The 12th is promoting accountability and fighting corruption, which is more inward looking to the department. And the 13th is transforming society and uniting South Africa, which is quite pronounced as well, divisions in rural areas, which we have back to. As we mentioned, the overview, as indicated, indications are of convergence between rural development and these policies are illustrated in the comprehensive rural development and what we actually learn from there, lessons and observations from the CRTP method and implementation, the methods being addressed through a land reform green paper. Important to note is that the indications are based on methods arriving from the CRTP implementation and transformation of the Department of Rural Development Land Reform, our own transformation of the department. The CRTP itself, despite the success, is only 33 months old since its launch in August of 2009. There are actions needed to strengthen the basis and to scale up and mainstream some of these positive indications, as I mentioned, that we will actually highlight those as well. I'm going to cluster these as well. The first one, steering the economy towards a more value-added and labor-intensive growth path. Rural development and reform is premised on a gradient transformation strategy, which is primarily to improve community and household relations towards the livestock, land, livestock, cropping, and community. All CRTP site interventions are based on structured community engagement through profiling, establishment of councils of stakeholders, and other such participatory interventions. Most of the development work emanating from that may be refurbishing of schools, putting up of fences, clearing of fields, establishment of community garden is actually used as a basis to create employment for local residents. And as such, it is not only value-adding to the community per se, but also labor-intensive in its methodology and approach. Hence the coherence with one of the central themes of this. of these three policy frameworks and plans. The recapitalization and development program has been able, amongst others, to capitalize 640 of the 1,807 farms that were identified as pre-2009 land reform projects that were under distress. Nascent indications are also arising that are showing us that there is a slight move from phase one of the CRDP, or mainly of fighting poverty, towards establishing enterprise, industry, etc. Indications of these are emerging with area-wide product forces such as poultry, targeted for Gauteng and Mpumalanga, gold farming in Gauteng and Northwest, grain in Mpumalanga and the Free State, sugarcane in Mpumalanga and KwaZulu-Natal, red meat industry initiatives in KwaZulu-Natal, the Ladysmith area, and in the Free State where this is particularly advanced. So beyond just dealing with issues of the war on poverty, job creation, or creating job opportunities, etc., there is in the process ways of starting to have a more holistic approach, an area-wide approach, benefiting from economies of scale, being able to create the amounts needed to service some of these markets, such as abattoir offtake of in terms of red meat in the Free State and what's been started around the Ladysmith areas of KwaZulu-Natal. The National Development Plan has further identified 18 products, agricultural products, which are high value and labor intensive in their nature. The question is how we position ourselves as a department to deal with such products such as table grapes, prunes, macadamia nuts, vegetables, which are listed 18 of them in that, and in which areas do these best grow, so that we have got a more structured way of dealing with agrarian transformation around some of these and aligning to the objectives of rapid growth as well as creation of employment. There's other sectors where there are opportunities which we still have to position ourselves to effectively take on. Mining and the mining charter and the social labor programs are a case and example where mines have made available resources for infrastructure for very challenged municipalities in the rural areas. Rural tourism strategy has identified opportunities and has identified districts which are actually to be prioritized. There's also a project in the Eastern Cape that we are starting to deal with in the area of biofuels or alternative energy, which is the sugar beet project. These are indications that we are more or less in line with some of these priority economic areas that have been identified and methods of doing work that generates employment. Phased and inclusive growth that promotes small business. As I mentioned, and as members may know, there is a phased approach on the CRDP. There's a three-phased approach. And as I mentioned, that in all the CRDP sites that we actually establish and deal with, the involvement of communities, the prioritization of poverty, the prioritization of creating of job opportunities from project implementation are highlighted. Furthermore, the 640 recapitalized projects, the 848 additional projects since 2009 that have been created by the through the distribution of 882,000 hectares of land will put us in good stead to be able to develop further rural small enterprises, smallholder projects to meet this initiative of phased and inclusive economic growth that promotes small businesses. As has been reported in the past, capacity has been put in place in the form of mentors and strategic partners to ensure that these projects are supported and productive discipline is actually embedded within these products and they are actually productive. The recently tabled midterm review report of rural development and land reform goes into detail to show what such projects are in the various CRDP sites, Dronzo and Dietlawa and others, showing yields and income to households from Lucerne right through to wheat, etc. So that report was presented around the time of the budget plan, and details are provided there on success in these areas. As I've mentioned, the 18 high-value, high-level intensive projects will actually provide added opportunity for certain regions where these products actually are developed. And more importantly, the spatial planning and land use management goal that aims, among others, for an integrated and spatially targeted approach will actually assist in actually taking on this method of an area-wide approach to agro-enterprise development and further strengthen the basis upon which we could actually develop small businesses and ensure inclusive growth. The next one is achieving full employment, decent work, and sustainable livelihoods. The new growth path for targets 445,000 jobs in agriculture value chain, and also indicates that the improvement of conditions of work for some 600,000 workers by 2020 would actually go a long way in meeting this particular objective. The Draft National Plan targets 1 million jobs by 2030 from agriculture and rural development. To effectively address and quantify this target, we have to improve on our collaboration with other relevant departments, including the such as agriculture, as well as trade union movement and organized agriculture, so that we don't actually account and duplicate what we're accounting for in terms of job creation, but we actually are able to say that collectively, these are the jobs through our collective efforts that we have actually been able to achieve. Hence, intergovernmental improvement in intergovernmental relations become critical. The creation of viable alternatives such as smart villages, agri-villages, and long-term area-wide development initiatives will also go a long way towards small business development. These integrated rural settings will also be sites that enable service delivery and sustainable livelihoods. The support environment and facilitation of development by beneficiary institutions is also important to ensure that beneficiaries are able to have certainty in taking on the risks associated with agro-enterprise undertakings, as well as to allow them, as I said, in the development plan, to be champions of their own destiny. Hence, the building of their organization through cooperatives, the building of their institutions, through councils of stakeholders, the indigenous land rights management committees at local level, and various structures that are on the ground will go a long way in ensuring that the development is controlled, managed, and directed by the end beneficiaries. Community property associations policies are currently being reviewed to ensure that this is actually done. In 2010, the challenges with the farm equity schemes were identified, the program was actually put on hold, a whole review was done, and then it was reopened, all in an effort to actually ensure that there's an inclusiveness, there's decent work, decent benefits are actually being achieved from our programs. There's work underway in the department to facilitate agreements on norms and standards for service delivery in rural areas. What applies in the urban areas cannot automatically apply in the rural areas. Our yards are bigger in rural areas. The entire ambiance of the rural area would allow certain types of housing to be built, which would actually be SABS approved. How do we ensure that we're able to deliver water services on bigger stands? How do we ensure that we're able to deliver bulk services to what municipality may define as private property if it's not their property? How do we ensure that we are able to deliver electricity to such sites? Hence, the department, as one of its instruments, is to try and work towards service level agreements with the core sector department so that in the eventuality of the development of agri-villages and smart villages, we are able to deliver these services whose standards currently are suited for an urban context with a 400 meter square or 500 meter square site rather than maybe an 800 meter square site, as may be the case in rural areas and prepared by rural people. Investing in infrastructure, once again, that norms and standards that's being negotiated with various departments will assist in a long way to ensure that infrastructure such as housing, bulk services, etc., actually are met in rural areas. in an amicable way, which meets the interests of the rural people, plus the standards for delivery of the amended standards for delivery of the second department. The department has refined its policies through capitalization and rural development. In the meanwhile, the department has done that and is involved in a number of infrastructure projects in the rural areas. These are delivering roads, they're delivering bridges, they're delivering footpaths. The animal and fowls program in particular is actually delivering on ways of land management, the fencing out of Amadelo. There is a targeted approach towards, which is also identified in the development plan, of revitalizing irrigation schemes. If my memory serves me well, we last year were able to revitalize about 5 of those or 8 of those, and we're targeting a similar amount for this particular financial year. Caches have been upgraded or built, schools have been actually upgraded or built, community centers and clinics have been developed, ICT equipment has been provided to schools and these centers. So in the area of infrastructure, both primarily social infrastructure, we are going a long way to actually assist. And indeed, when those service level agreements with the second department have been entered to, we will actually take this to a much higher level. A policy incongruence, however, exists between what we believe is real and what some of these policy documents are suggesting, like the NGP and the DNDP. And I think it actually emanates from the national spatial development perspective of the previous administration, whereby there's an assumption that certain areas are damned to non-viability, and as such, they will perpetually have to rely on government grants and support with no opportunity for them to be turned around. However, this is premised on some sort of an urban-biased approach and an assumption that urbanization is on track and cannot be contained. International practice suggests otherwise in certain places like South of America, as well as in Europe, that a careful management of spatial, social, and economic interlinkages could turn make places that have been deemed unviable as opportunities and turn them around. Furthermore, opportunities such as tourism, mining, and niche services could also turn around certain areas that have been deemed as economically unviable into vibrant areas. A case in example, if we look at the whole area from Dr. Ruth Marvati in the northwest to John Daoule Khaitiwi, this municipality in the northern Cape, right through to the Kalahari in the southern districts of Botswana, that's an animal area, goats and cows, but it's being dealt with separately, individual farmers, private, public, in community, etc. If there was a program in that region, this is say we are focusing to extend this and make it the Texas of South Africa, you could just imagine, Chairperson, the amount of goodwill, the amount of economy generation around beef, around goats that would emanate from that particular region. So it is this creative approach, this approach that are suggested by the Spatial Development and Land Use Management Bill, which is our bill, which we have to administer, but I'm also saying we have to apply within our own programs to ensure that we are able to manage the limited resources we have around infrastructure development, as well as manage the limited resources that we have in terms of inclusive economic growth. Building a low-carbon economy, the priority area, this area is identified in the development plan, although it looks at a low-carbon economy. The IPEP actually goes to some level of detail and looks at a whole range of issues that relate to the technologies associated with primarily using solar energy. As a department, we have also, in some of the CRDP sites, used quite a lot of energy generation for solar in the form of solar geysers to a number of households in these areas. The challenges we do have, however, is water challenges that these areas have, and as such, we cannot install all those. But that is an indication that the will is there, and the technology is being used, and the approach is being aligned to by the department in its policies. There are areas of improvement and opportunities that exist that we can tap into. Countries like New Zealand, etc., have used cow dung, as municipalities have used waste, or as the South African breweries have used their brew pulp to generate energy in biodigesters. If 97% of our land is primarily for cattle rearing, and there's a number of feedlots for fattening them, we can only imagine the opportunities that there are for energy generation at local level using biodigesters and cow dung as a substrate. Once again, we'll need to actually find ways to mainstream this in our policies and deal with that, and assess that opportunity as to whether it will actually be cost effective in the challenge of saving energy and generating energy for ourselves and communities going forward. The National Development Plan also says to us, we need to, as a first step, to start gathering information, evidence-based information, on what are the areas that are impacting on, that are being impacted by rural areas and other problems by climate change, so that when we develop a response strategy, it's actually based on evidence that's in existence. So it's important that we institute systems within the department to try and see in areas of desertification, the drying out of rivers, the patterns of rain, the patterns of climate, how are they impacting on production, how are they impacting on areas like in the Western Cape, which are primarily focusing on wine, and maybe the climate is changing in some of the localities and it's becoming a challenge for wine growers. Or other areas like the maize triangle in the Free States, what impacts are we having, and other areas as well in our country. So evidence-based and collection of data will become important in the forthcoming future, maybe in the MTF period, so that we can make informed decisions on climate change mitigation strategies, which will be important for the department as well. Rural development, human development, and sustainable rural settlements. As indicated, the two programs discussed and recommended, rural development broadly and human development as well, and the issues of human settlements. The development plan talks of a differentiated strategy to various areas. It emphasizes the challenges of densely populated, previously Bantustan and self-governing territories, and strategies by which we could actually deal with this particular challenge. It also identifies pockets of opportunity within some of these areas for urban agriculture and small business development. I think this whole area, although we are part and in the business of rural development, this whole area of human settlements development, spatial planning, sustainable rural settlement, in these challenged areas like the communal areas, hinge around tenure. And within the Green Paper, the Land Reform Green Paper process, efforts are being made to address these particular matters in a more coherent and a well thought through manner. And soon we will actually be coming out to Cabinet as well as to the public to make bold suggestions on how we proceed in addressing both on-farm tenure and communal land tenure on a region-wide and developmental basis to ensure a sustained and lasting solution to these challenges. A critical statement made in the Green Paper is finding social solutions for social problems. And in these two areas, we cannot legislate them away. There will need to be detailed brass tack discussions between ourselves, organized agriculture, labor tenants and farm workers and FAO and others, between ourselves, communities, as well as the traditional authorities to resolve these matters once and for all, find a lasting solution in areas that are impacting adversely to a number of our citizens and move forward with the business of development and economic growth. So that will be the thrust that we go forward. The proposals that will be developed or that we consider are subject to further detailed and structured negotiations on the ground to ensure that what was achieved by our leaders in the 90s around CODESA is also sorted out in this area of major constraints. Let me proceed. I'm building a capable state. This is inward looking. It's really important about the transformation happening in the department, the business process, the energy. A number of sub-programs have been established to improve our work since 2005, such as the point of land acquisition strategy, the institution of the land rights management facility to protect vulnerable people from arbitrary eviction from farms or elsewhere. A new range of leaders have been appointed with the recent appointment of the Chief Land Claims Commissioner, Ms. Govorto. There's a range of community-based planning approaches that have been used that have actually indicated of particular relevance has been the National Reference Group that's assisting us in deliberating policies, the inclusive approach rather than approach of the department just determining what ought to be policy. I'm not saying that's what happened in the past, but there's a concerted effort by the minister to ensure that various interest groups and amongst various stakeholders are involved in these policy deliberations. Corporate governance and management of the LEED program is important and requires leadership, more interaction with communities, and more channels for interaction suggest further accountability and involvement of citizens in our program development. There is a program to upscale on this on restitution research, and amongst other things is to go back as soon as possible to all claimants and landowners whose land is under claim or were for claims, and literally say to them, this is where you are, this is where the claim is, and this is what is going to happen. We hope to be able to do that by the end of the year, early next year, after we've actually done an initial assessment of all the claims and seen how exactly how we're going to approach each claim, so we can go back to people and actually tell them that this is what's happening with your claim, which is where we're actually going, and this is the time frame which it will take. There's a range of control systems that have been put in place in the department, like the internal audit has been jacked up, a risk management directorate has been put in place. There is an expeditious process of dealing with corruption cases that have been identified, and these indeed chairperson are deterring others, or at least we hope that we are deterring others. There is an effort to improve on the audit findings, and we put actually 2014 as a clean audit year for the department. And the last audit, I think, was an improvement from the previous one. Transforming society and uniting South Africa. As we mentioned, this area of rural development land reform has got a number of contentious areas which impede progress. Of particular relevance is the issue of tenure on commercial farms, the issue of communities in communal areas, and tensions between traditional leaders and municipalities. Without these being unlocked on a participatory and a structured dialogue basis, our progress on rural development will actually continue to be hampered. Hence the need for us to go forward, come up with clear proposals, show leadership as a department, base our proposals on evidence, and proactively take it by the scruff of the neck and engage in a participatory manner towards finding solutions to these. There are areas of improvement. Strengthening our intergovernmental relations is critical. We are a coordinating department. We are a lead department in terms of one of the programs of government, priority programs of government, and we have to improve on our intergovernmental relations and how we work at each of the departments, the key departments identified under Outcome 7. Support to change and land reform needs of other departments to unlock development. If you look at the rural development strategy, the recent PICC projects, and others, the issue of programs that are blocking development would need to be addressed, such as tenure, such as restitution, etc. Create a basis for strategic land acquisition so that we ensure that the land that we acquire is actually of high value, is properly located, and really assists in our development objectives in the rural development arena. Strengthen beneficiary selection, that's what we have to improve on. The whole issue of the role we play and the focus we provide to the youth is one that we need to seriously consider. Improving knowledge, information, and skills in the area of rural development and land reform. The mandate of the department has changed. The skills in the department needs to be re-looked at to ensure that at least we are able to converse with these new technical areas in managing the program going forward. Improve communications of faced the successes that we've made, continue to build the capacity of rural development and land reform beneficiaries to champion their own development, strategically position ourselves to both administer and implement this plan. Conclusion, once again we conclude that based on the presentation provided above, all indications from the pilots that we've been doing over the last 33 months, there is convergence with these particular institutions. Chairperson, members and DG, thank you very much.
Honourable members, here is the presentation. This is now an opportunity for questions of clarity, unless DG, you have something to add. All right, honourable members, here is the platform open for you. In that order, please. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. All what they have raised here are very, very interesting. But we need to be the part of it. And let's say page 1, page 13, when they promised they are going to build bridges, roads, crashes, school, and so on and so on. Because if we are not a part of it, there nobody is going to monitor, which is very, very important. Over this weekend, I was called by the people, community there. They're complaining about water. But I parked my car next to a pipe, which is closed with a big bolt, instead of putting a tap. We say if we find such things, then it means that when the government is trying to improve life of our people, since we have no monitoring and nothing we are going to achieve, when we go further down or go up the stream and then we find that at the back the taps are getting dry, and all this can be so successful, but we hope that since the minister, when he delivered his budget speech, he highlighted all these things, but we need to be the part of it. This is the main thing that I would like to raise, that please make MPs the part of it. We are going to achieve a lot. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. In slide number 6, Roman speaker 3, there are 9 key challenges that you say you have dealt with. I would love to know which are those 9 key challenges. In slide number 10, again, Roman figure 4, we have identified 18 special products. I also would love to know which are those products we have identified. And in Roman figure 5, I would love to know that sugar beet process in Eastern Cape. How does it perform and when was it started? In slide number 12, Roman figure 2. No, I know about that one. It was also in the television address. Never mind. In slide number, which number is it now? 13. The presenter has made a very good remark, you know, about animal farming. What I would love to know, in the area you have mentioned in your presentation, that is Roman figure 5, right at the bottom of slide number 18, does the government have any land in that area? where this could be implemented. Lastly, Honorable Chairperson, in slide number 14, those solar energy users, you know, during the campaign period of local government elections in Mali and Eastern Cape, there is an area there, it's called Shulega. You have visited there. There are these solar energy geysers there. You know, the people say ever since these geysers were put there, they never received good rates. So what I want to know, honestly, that is what they say. Ever since these things were put there, we never had good rates. So when people were shocked about these things, because really this is for their own good, but they are having misconceptions about all these things. Lastly, Honorable Chairperson, for instance, slide number 13. You know, you that is romantic and train. You say there are tensions. I want to find out from you, what are these tensions in communities, in communal areas? What are these tensions? Because I'm from there. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Chairperson, I want to ask a very difficult question. I'd like to hear the department on it. Around the issues on slide 8, around the draft national development plan, all these issues that need to be addressed, 13 issues in the agricultural areas or rural areas, nothing is made mention of crime and security. Just this weekend, former ANC MP David Lally was murdered. A headmaster and his wife were attacked in UB. I happened to be on the farm next door to where David Lally was killed on Sunday. And I was in the Maluti area over the weekend, where there was absolutely, it was quite stark that there was no livestock there. And there was no overgrazing. The veld was in magnificent condition, but just a distinct lack of livestock because of their proximity to the Sotho and the high incidence of stock theft, coming across border stock theft. So unless we sort out crime and visible policing and crime prevention in rural areas, in communal areas, farming areas, and in the flatland, we're going to have a problem. So I'd like to hear the department on that. Because all these other things depend on an environment that people feel safer. Chair, I'd like to hear a little bit more about the CRDP and the role and function of Council of Stakeholder Committee, because there was mention made of that, and then in the next page there's a talk about Mthonto and what's happening there. We know that there's a controversial issue about clustering of projects and having one stakeholder, Council of Stakeholders, for multiple projects. I'd like to know what's being done about that. And then, Chair, a lot of the discussion here in this document refers to the Special Land Use Management Bill, Special Planning Land Use Management Bill. Now, it's been a controversial document, and it was sent to the NCLP and then re-diverted back to the National Assembly for re-tagging, and that document hasn't been satisfactorily amended since it was declared unconstitutional, and we missed the deadline, and I want to know whether the department has applied for an extension. Chairperson, much of the discussion around SPLUM and productivity of land reform and rural development projects deals with the issue of tenure reform. I know that there's a stakeholder group green paper, but what is happening with the draft national development plan's reference to addressing tenure issues apart from CPAs? I'd like to hear some comment on that. And then lastly, Chairperson, the green economy or a low carbon economy. I went to a project in Tala where the municipality has built an abattoir 6 years ago that's never slaughtered one animal. I'm very pleased to say that everything is still intact in that abattoir. Everything is intact. They've had a security guard there for 5 years, so it's been quite costly because it's had no income but lots of expenditure. But they're also now building a 5 million rand fire digester, the district municipality is, right next to the abattoir, but they're not slaughtering any livestock there. So we've got to be careful that we don't initiate these projects that are not sustainable because they just don't have the biomatter to actually generate green fuel. And then I wanted to ask about the progress on the sugar beet project in Craddock as well, and my colleague did ask that. Chair, then the last page, I think, to me, page 17, point number 8 about transforming society and uniting South Africa. It's a very difficult issue, that, because it's a challenge that faces all of South Africa, and I think that the only way we can do meaningful uniting of our country is to actually bring different people together in initiatives where everybody can get some benefit. What is the department's take on building reconciliation through integration of society and communities for mutual benefit?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, let me start by appreciating the presentation, but also to seek clarity on some of the issues that have been raised on the presentation. On the issues of the relevant actions that the department has highlighted with regards to item 2 and NGP, what I wanted to check is that I want to know that your strike plan or your operational plan talk to some of the actions, because I think the actions that you have indicated here are the actions that will try to address some of the issues that have been raised in the IPOC 2 and also in the NGP and also in this national the draft national plan. But does the operational plan talk to some of the issues that you highlighted here? Secondly, Chair, I think infrastructural development is one of the factors that can improve the lives of the rural people. But in most cases, you know, during this tendering process, in your tender specifications, you seem not to emphasize the issue of labor intensive and also the issue of skills transfer, because infrastructural development must be in line or must comply with the EPWP principles. But in most cases, you find that the service providers are ignoring the two issues of labor intensity and also of the skills transfer, so that even after the project has been finished, people can be able to be employable, you know, or be able to employ themselves. Secondly, on infrastructural development, the issues of the rates seem to undermine the rural or to be biased, because in most cases you find that the rates that are being paid, you know, the urban people are benefiting more than the rural people. The rates are not really the same. In urban areas you find that people are being paid more than those people living in the rural areas. So instead of bridging the gap, you know, the infrastructural projects are strengthening the gap that was supposed to bridge between the rural and also the urban people. CRDP is one of the major programs that is aimed at improving the lives of the rural people. I think you were witness to that. There's a lot that you have been doing. But you know, the major challenge is the issue of the lack of participation or the go slow by other departments. Because you know, you cannot enforce them to participate. If they will, they can participate. If they feel we don't want to participate, they can't. They can't. So that is one of the major challenges that I've identified. So what I wanted to check, how are you going to make sure that really all the departments that are supposed to be part of the CRDP project, they are participating? Then the last one, you know, there's a lot that is being, that is taking place in rural areas for subsistence peoples and also for commercial peoples. But the major, major factor on the commercial side, you find that the issue of the market. And you have mentioned something under item 2 of promoting of export market. Then how are you going to make sure that really, because there are lots of people that are farming vegetables, you know, there's lots of variety of products, but the problem is the issue of the market. Even the local market seems to be a challenge. Then how are you going to intervene and assist them? The issue of the water and the water rights. People have got the backyard gardens. They are willing to farm. They've got these small games in rural areas. They call small games. But the challenge there is the issue of the water and the water rights. Then how are you going to intervene and assist? Agro-processing also the challenge, because in Mpumalanga we've got lots of fruits, but they are being transported to Gauteng, you know, to be processed, to be dried fruits and juice, come back, you know. How are you going to make sure that the value chain from raw material up to the last finished product, because it will assist in the creation of jobs. Thank you.
Thank you very much, honorable members. Oh.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, mine will be on the implementation. I just want to establish if the department has the capacity on ensuring that this becomes exactly what it is, because this is a very good, these are very good problems for the government to be able to ensure that there's economic activities at rural areas. Is the department able to have enough capacity and resources, enough resources? I mean, there must be a beginning, and we don't need to hear about the budget not being enough, but there must be a beginning, and then there must be a spot, capacity and the budget. Thank you.
The two more hands that have emerged, we start by asking Honorable van der Linde and then Ndadi Ntobeko.
Mr. Chair, the first is what the previous speaker just asked, the capacity to have the projects implemented. I'm from the central Karoo, your office there has got nobody almost working there anymore. There was a lot of people, now there's one person in the administrative capacity and one who's dealing with all the other projects. So the capacity to roll out the things. There was a question on the solar energy. From the area I'm coming from, it would have been of great help if all the projects from land reform was helped, if there was solar energy, because the energy isn't available on most of the farms. Electricity isn't available. So if the solar project, it will help our people in those areas. I think that's, in this case, all what. I've mentioned a lot of times the Narise. I'm trying to I'm sitting with. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Comment will be around slide number 10 with regards to coordinated agro enterprises. Just one thing, just to raise the person that when one looks at that, as has been stated here, that mostly in favor than focus on sugar cane. Large farms in the province have sort of been taken over by residential developers. So it shows a lot of people who have been employed working on those sugar cane farms that lost employment. And the point I'm trying to raise here, Chairperson, is that since there are these communal areas, we have these small cane growers in those areas who at times find themselves not being sort of attended to by some of the holders who are responsible for taking the sugar cane from the farms to the mills. What then the department is doing, if any, with regards to making a sort of inroads in establishing the challenge that these small cane growers are facing in their areas. We find that their harvest is kept in the planting sections or in the pounds until they lose what actually is required by the means. Then if the focus then is that these farmers in communal land can be assisted, would be maybe that of saying try to sort of bring them together, because there is vast land that is lying fallow in the areas. Group to tell and be assisted in sort of plowing sugarcane so that they could produce and get an income for themselves as the communities. The other challenge with the farmers that are still farming, the commercial farmers are still farming, you could find that they are now employing a lot of machinery in dealing with the weeds in even harvesting. They have now harvesting machines, which as well take away that opportunity of labor in the farms. And when you go to these small cane growers, they're still using manpower to work out their fields. So if then the department can sort of as well make inroads on the source to see that these people are assisted, then they become maybe a commercial farmers on the young way. Thank you.
Two from my side. I like the presenter because he emphasizes on the high level nature of the strategic nature of your view on the three documents and how you anchor your relevance in them. And for me, that's the key issue. Because of that, it raises the question, maybe let me raise the same question as our two members raised, but differently. He makes the point about the changes in the department. But I find it difficult to understand those changes in relation to the relevance on the issues raised here. Let's take a practical example, teacher. If you are to do the kinds of things that he is raising, both at the initiation stage, in the actual processing by yourselves, resourcing by bringing in all the mechanization and other things for the rural economy to be revitalized. You need wondering whether the restructuring that the presenter is explaining to us is actually relevant. I wanted to give you an example that Honorable Mashangu here was telling us about the capitalization of the 640 farms out of the 1,807 farms that were acquired before 2009. Whether that comes closer to what the Honorable the Presenter here was talking about in the actual capitalization of the country. Or are you talking about just the first steps? I know that the 33 months you are emphasizing on indicates that you're fresh, new kids in the block. But because you see, if you create a framework within which you are going to operate in order to revitalize the rural economy, the building blocks, either in your own choice, will be small or medium or big, whatever. I'm just interested in your view on this matter because I don't quite see whether institutions you are creating are relevant and matching that framework you want to create for yourself. I'm very seriously curious to find out what you do. But DG, bulk of what you are going to get from Treasury depends entirely on how you approach them in terms of what you want to do. It looks for me that when you approach Treasury, you're looking back, not forward, which means more of the same. Whereas what the presenter has given us is purely, in majority of the situation, looking forward. And in order for you to look forward, let me go back to the same point I made, we then check whether you are going to start small, medium, or large, and a framework within which you operate today. Because then resources, what they say in your public administration, funds follow functions. So if you create the functions that will either be small, you will fund small. If they are medium, you will fund medium. If they are large, you will fund large. And therefore, resources will then be required in that sense. So, curiously for me, DG, is the gentleman in this statement talks about a capable state. I know that sometimes you refer to a developmental state, but I don't know whether the ministers do the same thing. So for me, therefore, is the capacity of the department to do this thing. And secondly, how the department will be resourced. Because the way you will be resourced will be dependent on how you create and recreate yourselves to fit into these relevant issues that you talk about. For me, those are the two curious parts that I would like you to engage. Thank you very much. But please, Honorable members are waiting for answer.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Members, we will attempt to share our views. Chairperson, these are complex matters. I think some of the questions raised by the Honourable Member are questions that require like a straightforward response. For instance, the question Honourable Tori about the abattoir that is standing engine. The question Honourable Tapani is a very specific one about the sugar beet project. But I think the others are very, very big, heavy discussion kind of questions that we can only deliberate and engage on without being precise in providing answers. Precisely because that is the nature of the National Development Plan. It is getting us to talk and say, what is it that we can do as a country? So we will respond to those specific questions would just engage, not because we have monopoly of wisdom, insofar as these questions are concerned. I think the point, the comment raised by Honorable is about how do the members of Parliament become involved at the forefront, at the core face of the party. I think it is a critical point. I think our point of departure is to say this one, Honorable Chair, is not something any one department can do on its own. I think that must be our point of departure. We are going to need the whole nation to put all of us, our shoulders behind the wheel, and move forward together. I think the big question is the how. I just want to deal with the broad question rather than the specific one. My colleagues will help with the specific one. I think it is true that we must do everything in creating the necessary conditions for these ideas to prosper and translate into reality on the ground. If crime, stock theft, is a problem, there's no point in talking about a Texas of South Africa in another game. It's pointless. So, it's one of those conditions, President. We must address crime because nobody's going to want to put their money when their livestock is going to be stolen and lose everything. So, it is a very real problem that requires partnership between the Department of Rural Development and all state security agencies to work together. I think the question about the SPLAM, the Special Land Use Management Bill, I think we've tried to accommodate as many comments as possible. I think it's one deal that has been in the making for almost 11 years now because of the challenges that everyone is raising, because almost everybody wants to see their view in the deal, which is creating a challenge. We had a min-mec last week with the MECs from the different 9 provinces. We invited some of the mayors. It's quite clear that in some provinces, they still say, despite after having waited for 11 years, they still say, we need another year to further engage on this piece. On the other hand, the Constitutional Court cut-off date is coming and is going past. Very soon, the department is going to face litigation from developers who are saying you have jeopardized our investment because you have not put this bill in place. So it is that dynamic that we are trying to manage. Yes, the bill was introduced at the NCOP as a Section 76 bill, but the advice we have received from the NCOP is that the bill should be introduced in the National Assembly. So this committee has got to be engaged by the department on this one, because it is this committee now that must deliberate quite extensively and facilitate the engagement and the debate around the Special Land Use Management Bill. The minister intends introducing it very, very, very soon to the National Assembly. The cut-off date of the Constitutional Court is the 17th, which is Sunday. After Sunday, there is not going to be any Development Facilitation Act. We do know, however, that there are other old order laws in many provinces, at least in 6 of them. And some provinces have got new development planning legislation, such as the Western Cape and KZN. we are assisting other provinces to develop new provincial laws. The provinces that will be affected by the RACU on Monday are the Bofo, Northwest, and parts of Mbumala. We did apply for extension at the Constitutional Court. Our application was thrown out by the court. So we are at the mercy of Parliament now in terms of processing and approving the bill. But as I said, the Minister intends introducing it very, very soon to Parliament. We are dealing with the communalism tenure issues. There's a big, big, big area. And I think we've attempted to say, as much as tenure security is important in communal areas, what is more important is development in communal areas. We do know that there is a school of thought that believes that if you were to survey, subdivide, title land in communal areas, you would attract investment. We are saying without infrastructure, if nobody is going to go and build a big factory in the middle of the former Transkei, if they are going to pay millions of rand transporting goods from Mthatha to Durban or Richards Bay or Kuga, if the infrastructure is not suitable. So we're emphasizing development. Yes, land tenure is important, but we're emphasizing development in our approach to dealing with communal land tenure. We're dealing with that one separate outside of the Green Paper process, but we're saying we are hopeful that this calendar year we will be having a big debate, possibly public debate, on what is the future of communal land tenure in South Africa. There is a working group comprised of departmental officials, external partners, organized agriculture, civil society organizations, and academics that are already seized with this opportunity. We've got a draft document on the table that is currently being debated. Uniting South Africa is the country's vision. We are saying for rural development, social cohesion and development are the goals, is the goal of rural development. Dealing with issues of inequality, dealing with issues of poverty, relative income inequality, And cultural backwardness are the things we must address towards a united and prosperous South Africa. So we've got a contribution to make from the point of view of addressing the elements that I have outlined. We do believe we've got a role to play there. Obviously, addressing the inequitable distribution and access to land is key among those things. That must help unite the country. It is, Honorable Banyamabila, the operational plan and the first plan of the department does touch on some of this, but not all of them, particularly because the new growth plan, the diagnostic was released last year, we did have a draft in place. But in the main, the IPEF, the new growth path, as I said earlier on, we are dealing with that because it is part of outcome 7. It is part of outcome 7, and luckily, we are the coordinating department of outcome 7, so we are dealing with it. We are also dealing with it in the economic cluster, which we coordinate in government. Co- coordination. I think the question of coordination is directly related to the capacity of the department. We are saying our role is to coordinate, is to initiate, it is to catalyze, it is to implement, it is to facilitate. What we have realized with the benefits of hindsight, having introduced the DPP 2.5 years ago or so, is that we need to be, if anything, we need to be strengthening capacity for coordination in the department, rather than increasing numbers of people in the department. Yes, it is important to bring in certain technical expertise in some key areas of infrastructure, of economics, of land valuation, of engineering, spatial planning, and so on. But we are saying we don't need to replicate what exists in every other government department. What we need to perfect is the art of coordinating government efforts. We are involved, Chairperson, in an initiative, which is a public-private partnership initiative, working together with organized agriculture. We are looking at the land that is lying fallow, that is lying unused in communal areas in about 5 provinces. We have identified just over 500,000 hectares that can be planted. When we put certain departments together, trade and industry, Honorable Bonyamabila, from a marketing point of view, agro-processing, agro-logistics, we brought the Department of Agriculture, we brought provinces. What we found was that provinces already have plans on what they need to do or what needs to be done on this. They just didn't have the money themselves. But when we brought all of the parties together, we suddenly found that there was 800 million that can be put on the table to start implementing this initiative this year. So it is not even so much about us going to National Treasury asking for more money. It is about government getting its house in order, getting better organized, moving away from working in silos, realizing that if we are all to put our resources together, we are likely to make much more impact. So I'm just illustrating that without having run to Treasury to ask for more money to do this thing at the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform, but by calling a whole range of departments, we realized that there was a lot of money sitting in trade and industry, there was money sitting in Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, there was money sitting everywhere. And then we said, okay, let's put together a plan and say, how do we distribute the money across the country and how many hectares can we plant it this year? So I'm saying, Chairperson, one of the things we must work harder and harder on is improving coordination capacity of the department. That is our biggest challenge, and that is what we are working on right now. So that we don't on our own try and say, if people have planted maize, have planted citrus, how do they market it? We must get DGI to help us. We can't go and employ extension officers and employ agricultural engineers ourselves, vets and so on. We must say, agriculture, where are these technical experts? They must come to the party. We must just find that way and moving forward so that we are able to improve on that. I think I'm just generally at trying to address those bigger questions. I think the challenge here is, what model are we going to use? As we are busy dealing with these things, looking at this is the big question you're asking. Is the capacity that you are referring to in the department aligned to this big three? Not necessarily, Chair. Not necessarily. Let me give you an example. We are talking about the Green Table Land Reform, where we are proposing institutions. Those institutions must be capacitated to do what the department can do. We are looking, for instance, at the Green Paper on Rural Development. One of the things that is proposed on the Green Paper on Rural Development is a rural development agency. Well, who else is doing this work in the rural area? How can we bring the expertise of all of those together under one roof in a one-stop shop fashion, using existing resources rather than new resources, but better coordinate them? So the capacity we have is far from enough to do what is needed to be done. I think there's a specific question on CREDOC.
Chair, members, then decided to write it down so that I get it correct. The biofuel project at the interchange of the called Sugar Beet was started in 2003, and it has been stagnating because of the precedent condition presenting to the legislation that needed to be met, like appointment of the fees and all the related aspects that goes with such a project. The progress so far, we have acquired 15.5 million hectares. Huh? Yes, 15 million hectares. Sorry, 15,000 hectares. I should have not written it down. 15,000 hectares, of which 2,493 are under irrigation. During this current year, cabinet has reaffirmed its support for the establishment of this powerful project. We, with other state departments, we are facilitating the implementation of regulations like mandating the abatement of the biopropellant and the subsidies that goes with it, and high support mechanism for the biofuels and producers. Also, the project has received approval for the rezoning of the proposed factory site, which is here in Cairo. And engineering is taking place here. They are just waiting for the last approval of the EIA amendment and expression around the plan. And this column is completed. Upgrading of the local substation, basic engineering is also complete. The project is ready for the implementation. If everything goes well, it's supposed to be starting next month, and we should say in July. Mm-hmm. From the department side, we are now finalizing the selection of beneficiaries. Because of the strategic nature of the project, we are careful in terms of who must be allocated in those funds. Remember, it's not only 100% for the plant, but when you buy a farm in that area, you find that it's a combination of irrigation and livestock. So beneficiaries will have the benefit of using both the irrigated land for the specific purpose of the biofuel and also do their normal business in terms of the other commodities, i.e. livestock. So that's basically the progress around this project. Then there was, I think, a question on the abattoir. Maybe there it would be fair to ask for specific details so that one can make a follow-up.
On the question from Honorable Jolikulu about the support to small growers, I saw recently when one of the big leaders, the Thomas Hewlett Group, was announcing financials, they were boasting that they are providing a lot of support to small-scale growers. In fact, they were saying the small-scale growers are more profitable and are employing more people than big farms. I'm aware that in KwaZulu-Natal, the Provincial Department of Agriculture has put over 200 million working together with the sugar industry to support small-scale growers. If there is any sector in the industry, in agriculture, the sugar industry is one of the most organized. They have the resources, they have got a college where they are training people, they've got local structures around every meet. There is a committee, they share experience. we do know that the province had to intervene in, because most of the people in the former KwaZulu were farming sugarcane, and their livelihood largely depended on the small income that they were making. So we thought that the program is very much supported, particularly if you talk about small scale farmers. We do, as a Department of Rural Development, through our RECAP program, also have a very strong partnership with the sugar industry. Mm. We ourselves have invested over 100 million to help recapitalize land reform farms in Mpumalanga and KwaZulu-Natal. So there's quite a strong support for sugarcane farmers. We do have challenges. We do have challenges. We spoke about some of those challenges the last time, where some of these leaders think that we must push the farmers aside. They are too slow to learn. We'll farm on their behalf to increase the yields and increase the throughput into the mill. But we are engaging. We are engaging each other to try and improve on the partnership.
I'm assuming, Gigi, that the last comment was just an example of your idea, because you are impatient, not that you have done that. And that part of your input was relating to pushing the farmers aside, farm for them to increase the yields. I thought that was just an idea of how frustrated you are. You even thought of doing so, but you did not actually do that.
We're saying in the strategic partnership we have seen our some strategic partners doing that in reality, not something we're thinking about. But we don't think that's the purpose of a partnership, because we believe partnerships must be about skill transfer so that these farmers can stand on their own and run, not for the strategic partners to farm for them.
I agree, did you? The statement was left without indicating what the department did to correct that. I thought that you were talking about an idea. Now that it's a reality, but you didn't say what actually you did to stop it from happening.
Chair, I did say that we have engaged them. We are continuing to engage with them. We have pointed out to them that it is out of order for them to do that.
Maybe what we should tell the House. There is an intention by the committee to visit KZN for the second time. And we have gone to Lalazi, we've gone to the Upper Shore and other places. You see, the story we were told when we were there, especially in Pekesho, where there's a strategic partner, the understudy of the strategic partner, together with the chairperson of the committee and some workers, they employed 800 people who they saw impressed. But they were telling us that what you're talking about is actually taking place, where even the CBA chairperson does not know what's going on his own property, because they've been pushed aside and the strategic partner has taken over. Fortunately, they're not only on sugar beet, they've got this, what is it, subtropical fruit? Citrus. Is it not subtropical? Oh, what is the subtropical?
Oh, mangoes and peaches and.
No, I know, but I thought that those are subtropical fruit, but okay, if not, then that's fine.
Okay.
But DG, here is a clear example of the kind of problems that we're encountering. I hope we'll go back there to see whether that intervention did work. Remember, this is the place where we saw a tourism house that has been destroyed because of the feud between the CPA and the Inkos of that area, because the land belongs to the tribe, not to the CPA, and the CPA says no. I'm giving you details. I shouldn't, but the worry is, I heard you and you triggered this worry I have. And I'm worried about the effectiveness of your intervention if there are still people who are worried about that. Thank you, Chief.
Thanks very much, Jim. Just a few questions that were raised, and also ending with an emphasis as well on some of the points that you actually mentioned. The 8 challenges which were identified in the development plan, and they are the following. Too few people work, the standard of education for most black learners is of poor quality, in particular obviously in the rural areas, the case has been shown on TV of kids living under schools, the challenges of access to universities and colleges has been highlighted as well. The third one is infrastructure is poorly located, under-maintained and insufficient to ensure a fast and higher growth. Spatial patterns exclude the poor from the fruits of development. The fifth one is the economy is overly and unstably resource intensive. A widespread disease burden is compounded by a failing public health system. Public services are uneven and often of poor quality, corruption is wide, and South Africa remains a divided society. Those are the 9 ones which were initially highlighted in the diagnostic report of the National Development Plan, and have been taken forward into the current draft of the National Development Plan. The products, the agricultural products identified, the 18 pecan nuts, avocados, vegetables, bananas, lychees, prunes, table grapes, etc. Those are actually the ones identified as high value and labor intensive. Just getting back to your question, Chairperson, of micro, meso, and large scale approach. I think the DG's example of the 500,000 hectares that were identified shows it that with applying an attempt to apply Chapter 3 of the Constitution and corporate governance, we are able to realize those synergies, to discover that we've got resources. Others who are partners have got the idea and the will, but they haven't got resources to find those resources. And you can imagine us, if we identified some 800 million, the next person to come on board will be partners in business to say, there's a focus by government, there's a coordinated effort, all departments are there, resources have been pooled, there's a clear plan, there seems to be certainty for our investments, where do we come in? So we are at the pilot phase. I would imagine the IGR part, which the DG is actually identifying, the intergovernmental relations, strengthening the coordination, will be provided a framework by these nascent things that we identify in our various spaces. And hopefully out of that, with a clear program and plan and resources identified, we have to then go to the next phase of saying how do we leverage other finances. So I doubt it. In our country, between business and even international resources, I doubt it's actually the issue of money. It's how we coordinate and communicate our efforts and provide certainty for others to invest with the hope of benefiting. Thanks very much.
Don't think that's it. Chief, when the President announced the 300 billion rand for infrastructure development, the money was not sitting there, Treasure. It was across parastatals and departments. And when this process you're talking about was finally agreed to and an approach was developed, and they started a commission chaired by the President. Here, you're talking about an example of something like that, but which has not got to a stage where the coordination can be given an authority for that action to be implemented. South Africans are waiting for good news like this. But what is missing is the answer that can be appointed at, like the one that I'm talking about, of the president, on page 213 of the document you gave us, the draft, chapter 6, almost the last page here, it relates to the commissioners are writing and say, achieving this vision will require leadership on land reform, on communal tenure security, on infrastructure, financial and technical support to farmers, and building the capacity of the state institutions and industries to implement these interventions. Now, I'm really worried that, yes, this is a good example, DG. 800 million is here. And the fiefdoms and my territory jurisdiction issue is a problem. We need a central authority to say this will be done there by these people. That's what we're looking for. And I'm sure this committee will be encouraged. Even the limited way to say between yourselves and agriculture and the nine provinces, markets attend in land, or public waste comes in, and transport comes, and so on. So that something of this nature can evolve into that form of cooperation. We get disheartened when we hear that, not disheartened, discouraged when we hear that people are fighting among themselves because of jurisdictions and theft and things like those when the poor people are hungry. Remember, there's no more rollover now. There's no more rollover. Money goes back to national treasury when it has not been spent. And there is no punitive action for not spending money. People get paid and get bonuses for not spending the money. That is a problem. Fagu?
Chair, you've covered me. My question was, I want to add on to what you were saying. It is a... it is a concern, Chair, that that this department battles to coordinate with the Department of Agriculture. And if there are two departments that have to coordinate, it's those two. Let alone public works, social development, treasury, all the others, but there's a disjuncture, a disconnect between this department and the Department of Agriculture. And then it cascades down to district municipalities and municipalities. The one implements something, but it can't be finished because the other department hasn't got its act together. Can the department just tell us, as committee members, how you address that silo mentality in the department, with the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries? Because if we don't have any concept of how you deal with it, because I mean, you must deal with the frustrations. How do you then address them?
Chair, thank you very much. This is a big one. I think getting government departments to appreciate that we can make more impact work together is a challenge, because it's been a culture that every department wants to cut reports to say we have delivered this water, we have done this, we have done that. That is why if you look around government, you just check how many government departments are doing community gardening, how many government departments are providing solar water geysers. How many government departments are even building roads and so on and so on. It's not limited to the Department of Transport. So this is the challenge. But Chair, we fortunately, this is a task that both at the minister's cluster level and at the presidential level, it has been discussed. We have been given very clear marching orders. Our minister has been told that you lead, you coordinate. You don't you don't take over the functions of agriculture, but you get agriculture to do what they are supposed to do. You get water to do what they are supposed to do. We recently had a meeting. Even the Minister of Agriculture was saying, rural development needs. MECs in the provinces are saying, please, rural development, pull us all together. So this is, everyone has thrown this challenge at us to say, as you have said before many times, Chair, claim this space as rural development. So that is why I was emphasizing the need for us as a department to strengthen our own capacity to coordinate. So it's not like this mandate is contested anymore. The President said to us, you are working in silos. It affects this government. Rural development leads. So that instruction has come from that level to the minister. And all the ministers that are affected, including Minister of Agriculture, for example, Fisheries, Minister of Public Works, they all say, Sijonge wena rural development is okay. Perhaps at this level, at oversight level, we would really like our own committee at oversight level to see to what extent can this committee assist us with oversight between water, forestry, fisheries, public works, and so on. To say, because at this level it's going to be critical that at some point, all of us as this cluster of departments in the city, we want a seat with the chairpersons of all of these committees to say, where are the challenges? How can we pull better together? I think that will help us. Because I'm going to come here and report something. The DG of Forestry and Fisheries is going to go to his portfolio committee and report something, and so on and so on and so on. So there is no one place where all of us come and say to you as oversight body, this is what we are doing, these are the challenges, this is how we are dealing with them.
The better way to go forward on this matter, DG, would be to take your suggestion is number 3. Well, we are not supposed to help you. We are supposed to ask questions and go and see what you're telling us is actually happening. That's our responsibility. But we will take as number 3 that function, and we will invite you to see what we will be doing. I can give you that. Commitment, and these committee members, I know they are having this national interest at heart, and fortunately for this particular area, all political parties are at one in achieving this objective. But the second thing that DG has to happen is that we have to know that the minister, your minister, has taken lead, has called a meeting of all his own colleagues to address this issue, which means there has to be a process, I like his term, precedent to that action, where some concept is being put together. Even if you use that example of 800 million, because in order for you to be able to invite the private sector to come and join also procedure as we find it, you require a concept issue that has been put together. You will require a visionary statement that says this is where we want all of us to converge. And I expect that your role in that would be to help the minister to draft and put that document together. But we expect the minister to hear and see perhaps that meeting did take place. And then of course the first one would be to say within IGR the big man has, like you said, has given the order that this must happen. Like he's done with the infrastructure. That is a good example. And I suppose that there are many other good examples that can be pointed at. But we don't see them. We don't hear about them. Nothing. So for us to be able to be encouraged, the one that says, I am Israel. Why are you Israel? So, DG, please, it will be helpful to us that we see this vision that you have outlined. You see, because the presentation given to us indicates there's a coming together of some of the ideas to produce one vision. And because of that, we would want to see the minister say, this is what we need to be doing. Must be melanated, DG, over what period are we going to be able to do this thing? Because, you know, we did not want you, we didn't ask you to come here to show us this just to feel good. We want it translated into some form of action in order for us to be able to say we can contribute to. We can go out and see if you say 800 million will be spent on this particular area, these provinces will be involved. We'll go out there and see. But we have to see whether the chairpersons of other committees join us in that effort to do this thing. I know that the chairperson of public enterprises, the chairperson of minerals and energy, the chairperson of transport, the air transport, they are coming together under this infrastructure. They have ramparts involved, they have railway lines involved, they've got bridges and so on, up to the mine. And then all the towns along the route and the farms at the back of the towns are going to benefit from that process. So we now just mention cool to them.